Dudes and dudettes, welcome back to The Anxious Truth. This is episode number 157. Welcome back to the show. Today we have a guest. We are going to talk about kids and anxiety, children's anxiety, anxiety disorders in children, how it relates to us as parents, how parents' anxiety may affect kids. It's going to be a really good conversation. I have my friend, Dr. Jackie Bogdanov. This is what she does. She is a working, practicing therapist in the state of Wisconsin, and she specializes in treating anxiety and behavioral issues in children. So who better to talk about this topic than with Dr. Jackie? So before we get to that, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to direct you toward my book. It's called The Anxious Truth, just like the podcast, a step-by-step guide to understanding and overcoming panic, anxiety, and agoraphobia. It is written as a course in recovering from an anxiety disorder, in a very logical step-by-step sequence that is designed to take you from lost, confused, overwhelmed, and not knowing where to go, through being empowered and educated and having a plan and knowing how to execute that plan and go down the path to recovery. So I set out to write a useful recovery tool, and by all accounts, I have accomplished that based on feedback and reviews. So go check it out. If you'd like more help than I can give you in a podcast, you can find the book on my website at theanxioustruth.com/recoveryguide. It's all there. You can get chapter one free as a PDF, free as an MP3 download. Check it out. If you already have the book and you're digging it and you're using it and you love it, maybe head on over to Amazon, write me a quick review. I would appreciate that. It definitely helps out. So that aside, and that being said, and book plug being over, let us get down to the topic at hand, which is anxiety in kids and children and parenting and family issues around anxiety with Dr. Jackie Bogdanov. Sorry, Jackie. Let's get to it. You're going to dig it. I will see you guys after the interview. All right, folks, we're cooking. Dr. Jackie is on the line with me. I can see her. You can't. So I have a leg up. Jackie, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for taking the time to come on the podcast. And it's nice to finally meet you. We've never actually met before now. So
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Very welcome. So let's give the people, my peeps, the Reader's Digest version of what you're all about. Give us a little background on you so that they know who they're talking to.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a child psychologist. I currently run my own virtual practice, and I guess you could call it an education business, where I do blogging and have free resources for families and parents. And then I also have a small client caseload that I currently see virtually. That's what I'm doing right now. I've worked in lots of different settings. So I've worked in outpatient clinics. I'm back in Wisconsin now, but I used to live in New York, where I worked at the Children's Hospital in New York City, day treatment programs, schools, so kind of the whole gamut of clinical settings.
Yeah, that's how I noticed you, I thought you were still in New York. I don't know how I ran across you on Instagram. And I'm she's close.
Nope, back in the Midwest now.
No, she's not. That's all right, though. So you are practicing right now virtually, you know, at the moment, but...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So at the end, we'll let everybody know how to get at you, because you do put out a tremendous amount of really good information that I think is super helpful.
Sure.
What I want to talk about today is one of the questions I get asked all the time is, how does this stuff, Drew, that you talk about, you know, I have a son or a daughter and, you know, they're experiencing these problems. My son is having panic attacks. He doesn't want to go to school anymore. You know, the typical things. And by the way, if you are a concerned parent and you are listening to this podcast and you're following along in the community, thank you. Like, for being an advocate for your child. I appreciate that. So I get asked all the time, and I know that the principles are roughly the same, but I would much rather defer to somebody smarter than me in this area, and that would be you. So that's why I asked Jackie to come on, and she was gracious enough to come and help us out here. So what is the deal? You have a child at a young age, and I understand it's different. The ages will make a difference in how you approach these sort of things. But are the principles the same? We're always talking cognitive behavioral therapy, exposure, metacognitive therapy, same type of things, yes? But where's the wrinkle when it comes to kids?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. First line of recommended treatment for kids is still CBT, just like it would be for adults. I think obviously the biggest difference when helping kids is that you're going to have parents and other people more involved than you would with an adult. You know, generally when adults are in therapy, you're just meeting with them, the patient. Sometimes you might have a spouse or there might be another person involved, but usually that's really in a more collateral kind of, that person is more of a side note.
Right.
And when we're talking about kids, we're really more active having the parents involved, sometimes having teachers involved, depending on what the specific issues are.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess from a legal standpoint, you know, the parent has every right to be involved. Are there lines where the parent does not, you don't have to involve a parent?
That depends on the state that you live in.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, parents have access to their child's records. Mm-hmm. It's a little tricky with therapy because obviously as the clinician, you still want to have a relationship with the patient. And part of the way that you do that in building trust is keeping certain things confidential.
Yeah.
But yes, legally parents have access to the records and what's going on in therapy. For example, when I was in New York, I think 14 and above, they actually don't have to have parental consent if the clinician believes there is a reason to begin therapy.
Oh, that's actually pretty good. I did not know that. 14 sounds reasonable. Yeah.
I think that is correct.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's definitely not, you have to be illegal. You don't have to be 18 or 21. You could, at 14, you can make a decision to seek help, which is great. It's kind of empowering.
I guess the other thing related to that too is most often though, you don't see children asking their parents to take them to therapy. Yeah. It's usually the parent first seeing a problem and then it's about motivating the kid to come.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm guessing in that situation, if you or I may have a problem, we would be able to say, I'm not going to go to my mom and say, hey, can you take me to a therapist? I'm just going to go to a therapist. But you know, when you're dealing with a kid, the parent is always the first helper in the eyes of the child. So the parent is involved no matter what's going to happen.
Yeah. And usually kids don't know what's happening as they're starting to experience some of this stuff. Whereas an adult, you've had a lot more life experience and you know, like, hey, something's up. This isn't quite right.
Yeah. Yeah. Something's wrong. So the approaches are the same. So you're saying like CBT would be indicated just like it would be with an adult, but where do the wrinkles come in? Because I think a lot of people are nervous. They want to help their kids and they know what they're hearing from folks like us online, but they're afraid to say the wrong thing. So where does the wrinkle come?
Yeah, so I think with kids, the biggest thing between kids and I have worked with adults as well, but the biggest thing with kids is keeping it really fun and playful to an experience that they might anticipate to additionally be scary.
Yeah.
A lot of kids, especially anxious kids, are afraid of doctors and new people and new situations and all that. And so I think the first thing is really helping parents help their kids become comfortable with this idea and making it something fun and interesting for them.
Makes sense. I know that as an adult, I can understand the concept because I'm an adult, I have an adult brain. So when somebody says to me, like, I know you want to run and hide because of your anxiety, but you have to do the opposite to get better. I can understand that from a logical standpoint. I could hate it because I don't want to do hard and scary things, but
yeah.
How difficult to sell is that for a child? And I'm guessing it might change as they develop. So a child that's very young might be different than somebody who's a teenager at this point. How do we hand that message to a child? Like, you have to do hard, scary things.
Yes, that is the general message that we still hand them. It makes me think of a teenager that I worked with once. And when I was kind of explaining what we were going to do, his response to me was, "You mean just like the Nike slogan, I just have to do it?" And I was like, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, kind of.
but that makes it sound very simple. And usually it's not quite that simple.
Right, right.
It certainly depends on the kid's age. So have worked with kids as young as 3 or 4. And in that case, we're mostly working with parents to help them confront whatever it is they're worried about. Mm-hmm. And we're generally not doing too much explaining to a child that's that young. It's more about what kind of praise are we going to give you after doing this, or maybe what kind of reward are we going to give you for doing things like this.
Yeah.
And so that when they're really young, the education is really more to the parents. As kids get a little bit older, like, I don't know, 7, 8, and can really kind of understand more, I know this is really scary, I'm going to help you through it. That's when I would start to do the more psychoed with the kids as well, kind of explaining to them the procedure of what we're going to do.
Right.
And what I really like to do is just use a lot of metaphors with kids that they're going to understand. So usually what I'll do is take something that kids are good at already or interested in. So, you know, the kid plays soccer and I will say something like, "Well, I'm not a soccer player. So if I go into the big game, am I going to score the goal right away?" And I might build this up with a bit more of a story. But usually they'll say no. And I'll say, you know, okay, so how could I get better at that? How would I know how to score the goal when I get into the game? And I'll have them tell me all about it. And usually somewhere along the line, they'll say, you got to practice a lot. And so I'll use that to say, like, you know, it's just the same thing with your anxiety. We're just going to come up with different skills to use, and we're going to have to practice it a lot before you get better at managing it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's just kind of one. And I would, like I said, kind of tweak that to what their interests are. Again, with the goal of showing them the more that we do things, the more that we practice it, the easier it gets.
That's kind of genius. I mean, it's what you do, so you probably don't think of it as genius, but the idea, because we talk about that stuff all the time, and I always use it to get, I mean, Jack, you can see the guitars behind me. Like, I always talk about that. Like, you're never going to learn to do that, and you're going to suck at it when you first start. So you can say that to an adult, but I like the idea of actually the way you relate it directly to the child's life. So they are explaining to you what you have to do. And then like, oh, by the way, let me turn that back on you and let you know you got to do that. So
absolutely. And I think it helps make this thing that's scary to them a little bit more palatable. Like, oh yeah, there was a point when I didn't know how to, I don't know, dribble the soccer ball. I'm obviously not a soccer player,
I still don't know. So.
But yeah, I think it makes it more relatable to them.
Yeah, that's super cool. I like the way you approach that. Let's talk a little bit. I think there's two issues that I definitely want to cover for sure. One is, I noticed, I don't know where you had put it out there, but it was some information that you had done. You collaborated with another psychologist and you were talking about parent participation and the role of coaching the parents to not, this is probably the biggest thing. You know, I can tell an adult like, hey, I know you want to avoid the supermarket, but you have to go do that. It's super hard as parents to make our kids do things that we know are going to be scary to them. And our gut reaction is to want to protect them from it and shield them from it and handle it for them and make them comfortable. But that's actually the worst thing we could probably do. Or, I mean, there were worse things to do, but you know what I mean, in terms of recovery from anxiety disorder.
Yeah.
What the parents' role in that? Do you have a hard time with that? Because parents, we instinctually want to protect our kids. We don't want to push them out into hard things.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I think traditionally in parenting, that works in a lot of situations. So, you know, a lot of parents feel their job is to protect kids and we want to keep them safe. That is kind of the bottom line.
Yeah. Seems like it's right in the top of the job description, you know.
Yeah. And so I think the problem becomes trying to reframe that and rethink that when you have an anxious kid, because, or even not an anxious kid, but just a child that's experiencing anxiety in a particular situation, because that protection really reinforces that anxiety. Like you were talking about, just like with adults, then you're kind of accommodating that situation or allowing that anxiety to grow. By protecting them from that. So I think that's the first thing, that it's like a normal, apparent reaction to want to do that, to want to keep your kids safe.
Yeah.
And so I think helping parents feel that, that lots of parents do this, and this might've worked in a lot of situations or for your other kids.
Right.
But when it comes to this, we want a slightly different approach, because this is actually making it worse. It's not really allowing a child to experience that feeling. And it's also then making the child feel like, oh, this situation isn't safe. I need mom or dad there.
Yeah. And then they never learn their own flexibility, resiliency, find their own strength and ability to navigate. So I think, in a way, I guess probably explaining it that way might help. Like, look, I know it's really hard to watch them struggle right now, but you know, the learning is in the struggle. So if, you know, you wouldn't go out, you don't go to soccer practice for him. He has to practice. She has to practice herself, and she fails, and you let her fail. And that's how she learns. So the same thing, right? I guess you have to explain that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the same way that we want kids to see that they can do it and they'll be safe, there is this relationship here. And so you also want the parents to see, hey, my kid can struggle a little bit, but still be safe. Or they are capable of doing this. And when you're kind of protecting them from a lot of those things, you as the parent also don't have the opportunity to see like, hey, my kid can handle this.
Yeah. There must be tremendous, I'm going to say pride. It's not really pride. But there's got to be satisfaction in seeing your child. Hey, look at what they did. That's amazing. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like when they bring home a good score on a test, you're proud. I guess hey, this is the same thing. Life skills, like anything else.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that thing where, but you know, and it's got to be difficult, but what I was reading, which I found super interesting, was you do find better outcomes right? In the end, when the parents are coached properly on how to participate in this process, you can't protect, you can't shield, you can't accommodate, you can't coddle the anxiety, you actually have better outcomes in general with the child.
So the current statistics on individual CBT for kids is that it's about 60-70% of, I think it's similar for adults, but where that you have enough reduction of symptoms to say you don't have an anxiety disorder anymore. That still leaves a pretty big chunk of people that for whatever reason, the CBT isn't working. And it could be that they're not actively practicing it, or they need medication as well, or something else is going on. And so this sort of new body of research started where sort of like, hey, if we more systematically involve parents in what's going on, what does this look like? And as a part of that, they actually compared individual CBT to parent-only CBT, and the outcomes were just the same. In fact, I think in some of the study, it was even slightly better. And so I think there's much more of a push now to have parents much more actively engaged.
That's fascinating. Parent-only, meaning you teach the parents and then they are imparting that to the, that's amazing.
And it's really great actually for kids that you're having trouble motivating to get into treatment, because then you don't have to have the kid in treatment at all. You can just have the parents. But I think as a society and as parents is not really how you think about treatment in general. It's like, my kid is having this problem. So I want them to go to therapy. But if we have more education about, hey, we could actually just help you and that will help your child, then we can sort of avoid all of that in the first place.
That's fascinating. I mean, it's a different discussion, but it brings up that, like, you know, as a working therapist, you would not treat your own children. You know, there's a reason for that, for the most part. Even though you know all the things, you wouldn't necessarily take on your own children as clients. So, you know, that wrinkle. Like, you know, well, I'm dad, so I can't necessarily be your clinician, of course, but the parents aren't clinicians, they're guides. So it brings up that interesting conversation. It was probably another time for another time, but
That's an interesting point.
The other thing that get asked all the time that I would like to see if you can address is people are terribly worried because they may not have children that are exhibiting any signs of anxiety disorders, but they are worried that they are going to teach their kids anxiety or they're going to accidentally pass it on to them. You know, whether there's a genetic component, which I know we could probably debate about. There does seem to be some evidence that there's a predisposition maybe genetically. But, you know, should I hide this from my kids? Am I teaching them to be afraid? Am I showing them anxiety? I don't want it to happen to them too. How can I make sure I don't cause that?
So the I think it's a common question for sure.
Very
the first
common.
Thing that makes me think of is if you as a person or a parent are already feeling anxious or maybe even have diagnosed anxiety disorder, I could also see this sort of as part of the anxiety problem that you as the parent kind of latch onto or get focused or get anxious about, what if this is going to happen to my child? Which, like any other anxiety sort of symptom that we would treat, you don't have control over that. And that's really the bottom line. There are some things that you have control over behaviorally that you can do, but ultimately in the end, if your child has anxiety, you don't have control over that piece. And so I think that's part of something to keep in mind here. But like you said, we could probably debate, and there's the research is not totally clear is also the bottom line. So it really plays into that uncertainty about, can my child have this? But you know, there's likely some genetic component. It's a little bit higher if you as the parent have OCD versus a different kind of anxiety disorder. The genetic component is a little bit higher for your children. There's that. There's some research on genes and chromosomes and things. And then we also know there's this just environmental kind of contextual component to anxiety. For example, if your child has a big stressor, like you move or someone passes away or something like that, those kinds of stressful events can also kind of open the door to anxiety that might be there. The other thing with kids too, and it probably comes up more often with kids, is that there are kids that have certain temperaments that are more likely to develop anxiety. As adults, we might talk about this too, but I think it comes up more often with kids, where kids that are a little bit more inhibited. So kids that kind of are a little more on alert when there's a new situation or a new person.
Right.
And there's even like a physiological component to that. So like those kids, their hearts actually beat faster than a child that doesn't have that kind of temperament.
Okay.
Anyway, there's kind of a temperament style that can sometimes play into anxiety. But I think all this is to say there are lots of different areas that can contribute to a child developing anxiety that becomes a problem. I think the larger picture as a parent is sort of like, what if I model anxiety, or what if I respond in certain situations? And even if I'm asking those questions, I'm hearing the what if, which is again, sort of like the anxious question.
Yes, exactly.
But what I think about is if you as a parent have already recognized that you have anxiety, you have this whole skill set to help recognize it in your child and to help your child through it. You have this extra level of sort of empathy and validation, understanding for what they're going through, which I think can also set you up to be really successful if your child ends up struggling with it too.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. You know, it's funny. That was a way better, not that any answer would have been a good answer, I know, because of your experience, but the answer, the way you started that with like addressing the uncertainty, what if my kid gets anxiety too? Maybe. Like the answer is always maybe, and we have to learn to tolerate that. That was an excellent way to start that answer. Because I think, disordered anxiety is going to grab onto that, the one possibility is going to magnify it, or we know about the cognitive distortions. And then it's going to point that gun right at a really important thing in somebody's life, their kids and their ability as a parent. So, but what I really like was the way you wrapped it up, which is if in fact your child does develop this problem, whether or not you contributed to it or not, which you either... you don't know if you can or you're not. We don't know that in the end. Mm-hmm. What better guide will they have than you for having gone through it already? So
Yeah, absolutely.
And those predispositions, the genetic predispositions and this, the fact that, there's some information to that, it does kind of run in families. That is not a guarantee. That just means that maybe the odds are higher. So we probably should say that. Yeah, the odds are higher. That's all.
And I mean, you can't. These statistics are not, they're not statistics that you can compare exactly what I'm going to say, but, you know, for example, anxiety disorders, the rate at which you might inherit it from your parents is somewhere between 30 and 50.
Right.
And at the same time, 30% of kids through age 18 will develop an anxiety disorder. So the number of kids that might develop an anxiety disorder is pretty high already. So again, these are not the same things to be comparing, but just something to keep in mind when you're thinking about the information that's out there, that anxiety disorders are very common.
Among adults and therefore children are people too. They're just, you know, they're smaller versions of us. I know there are differences, but you know, they're susceptible to the same things that we are. So to bring back, you know, and I know that those are the best answers that we can give people. We don't know. Will you pass it on to your kids? Don't know. But you can be prepared for how to handle it if that does happen, and you know the ways to go with that.
Yeah.
But in your experience, because I know that this is going to be asked, I know, so I'm going to throw it at you. And you might have the same answer, which is like, we don't know, and that's totally fine. But I think people are very concerned with, should I hide it from my children or should I show them what I'm going through? Mm-hmm. Invariably, that becomes the follow-up question when I say like, well, we don't know. I don't know if you're going to pass it on to your kids. Well, what should I do? Should I keep it a secret or should I not?
You have
an opinion on that? It's probably an opinion more than anything else. And we can preface it by saying that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point. I think it is an opinion.
Yeah. There's no hard and fast rule here.
Yeah. And right. I think every family is different and every family's values are different. My opinion answer is it depends.
I knew that was going to be the answer.
I think it depends on where you are in terms of your own anxiety.
Yep.
In general, whether it's anxiety or any sort of more negative emotion, because usually parents don't have any problem showing their kid positive emotions.
True.
People don't usually question that. But whether it's anxiety or anger or sadness, I think it's okay to let kids know that that's what's going on. In fact, in some ways you could think about it as I am modeling to them that all emotions are okay. We all experience all emotions. The detail that I think is really important is that we have to be careful that we're not then expecting or even inadvertently expecting our kids to do something about those emotions. So it has to be really clear that mom or dad knows what to do about this. And this is what I'm going to go do. So I'm feeling really anxious right now that, I don't know, I'm trying to manage cooking the dinner and the toddler's crying.
Right.
I'm going to step over here and take a few deep breaths.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm feeling really nervous about this work meeting that I have. So I'm going to go practice my speech in the mirror. You know, so you're telling your child what the emotion is or what's going on, but you're also telling them, hey, I got this. This isn't something that you have to take care of. And so you're also in that way modeling for them, what do you do when you experience these kinds of things, obviously in a healthy way. And so I think that's what I mean by it's important to know sort of where you are in that moment. And is that something you're able to do? If not, I would probably excuse yourself for a minute and just say, hey, I need a moment, and go to the other room.
I think, you know, I've heard people talk about the, you know, children need to, they take their safety cues from their parents. And again, I this is a little bit out of my depth for sure, but I've heard that said over and over. So like, no, you can't show your kid that you're having a panic attack. Well, maybe when the kid is three, maybe not. But I'm guessing, well, you know, when she's 12, well, maybe yes, because now they can begin to understand a little more, like, this doesn't mean I'm going to die. There's no danger in the house. This is just a thing that I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
I loved how you brought up being very careful about making sure that the child knows this is not your responsibility. It's not your fault, and it's not your responsibility. This happens to everybody, and then we handle it like this. I will handle it like this. You can watch me do it, you know?
Yeah.
Really good. Really good.
Yeah, I think it's super important. And I think also related to like when you brought up the panic attacks, made me think of this, that if you do have an emotion in front of your kid, whether you say something about it or not, they're going to pick up on the fact that something's going on here.
Yeah.
And so I think, again, this is my own opinion, but one of the things that I would really caution parents against is if you do have those sort of emotions, whether it's anxiety or anger, and your child asks you about it or your child sees it, I would probably not respond with everything is fine. And one, because it's not, but two, because then that's confusing to kids. So I would at least label it like, I'm having a hard time right now. I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah.
Or this is anxiety or this is sadness. Because they already saw it. And so I think sometimes that's where parents feel hesitant, like, hey, I don't want my kid to think something's going on here or there's something wrong. But the reality is they're already seeing it. And so you don't want to send this confusing message of like, mom's about to cry or, mom's yelling. But no, everything's fine because it's clearly not.
You're right. Clearly everything is not fine. That's so good because I think that plays into even the stuff we were talking about earlier, where, you know, as part of this process, your child is learning resiliency and flexibility and how to react to the things that are a normal part of being human and being alive. So when you model that and let them know, like, yes, sometimes this happens. It's okay. It's not pleasant. Yeah. You know, I'm sorry that you're upset seeing me this way, but I'm okay. You know, I'm going to work it through and like, you can watch me do that. So you're modeling all kinds of good things that would help should that child actually develop some anxiety issues down the road. Those are probably valuable lessons that you've taught beforehand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I had this, remember what I used to do. So it's certainly good. I'm good. I'm out of questions. Otherwise we're going to go for another 45 minutes. Do you have anything in particular that you would like to add or talk about or bring up, common questions that you hear in your community or things you get asked all the time that I haven't brought up?
I'm thinking,
doesn't like putting you on the spot.
I think the biggest thing, and I think this is probably similar to adults as well, although I think when it happens with kids, sometimes it's a little bit more confusing, is really about the avoidance. So, you know, we know that the hallmark of anxiety is if you're avoiding something, whether it's something in your mind or something that you're actually doing. And I think sometimes this can be really tricky with kids because their avoidance can look like lots of different things. So it might look like they're flat out not doing something. It might look like they're throwing a tantrum or having a meltdown about something. You know, it might be they want something modified in a different way. Like, you know, a lot of anxiety shows up around eating or bedtime or kind of rituals around things.
Yeah.
And, And so I think because this avoidance can show up in so many different ways, sometimes it can get missed by parents as either like, my child's being really difficult, or this is just a phase, or things like that. And so I think it's just really important to think about what's going on with this sort of behavior.
Yeah.
And what's making this tough for my kid? And is this starting to become a pattern? And so I think kind of being aware of that can really help parents spot more of, is this anxiety going on or is this something else?
Yeah. I've seen you talk about that a lot in your Instagram feed, and it's always really good information. What could be behind this tantrum? What could be behind this behavior? What could be, not that you're trying to plant suggestions that everything is doom and gloom, but those are valuable clues, especially if they're repetitive and there's patterns that emerge.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. Like, you know, kids have sort of tantrums or meltdowns for different reasons. Doesn't just have to be anxiety related. And because anxiety is so common, we know anxiety is so common. I think it's important to keep that sort of in the back of your mind. Could this be something that's going to develop?
Yeah. I think another thing that people get confused about, especially if the parent is coming from their own experience with disordered anxiety, whether it's diagnosed or not, anxiety isn't necessarily an anxiety disorder for adults or children.
Yeah.
So I think parents to get a little bit gun shy with like, oh, I see my child being very anxious. And I'll tell this story that I think will help. My youngest daughter at one point called me up, and she was at high school at the time. And she was having a panic attack. Now, she had missed an assignment. There were some things going on, and she was just, the kid was stressed, and it boiled over. And she called me because, I mean, who else are you going to call? Your dad is this guy. So you call dad. And it worked out fine. It was over and she was fine. She just needed to talk to somebody, you know, and it gets a little reassurance. And she never thought about it again. And in my mind, I'm automatically thinking like, oh, I got to make sure she doesn't avoid that class. We got to get back to school tomorrow. Like, are you afraid of having the next one? She's like, oh, no, I didn't even think about it. I just had lunch after that. I'm like, okay. Yeah. So I think it's, you know, parents, we might sound that false alarm that says like, oh, if my child is anxious, they may have the same problem I have. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
They're allowed to experience life anxiety like everybody does.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I get a lot of questions too about like, oh, my child, especially on social media, like my child's anxious about this particular thing. And sometimes it's hard as the clinician to really separate, like, anxiety is an emotion that everyone is going to have at different times versus this is really a problem that we want to take sort of steps to address. And I think, again, sort of related to that, there are different life experiences for kids and sort of different milestones that are going to bring up different types of anxiety that's normal.
Right.
You can still use these same sorts of CBT strategies to help them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be doing that for, you know, several weeks or several months. You might do it a few times and then it's done.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And there are degrees in everything. So, you know, your child might be a little bit anxious about a musical audition or a test coming. It doesn't mean they're going to become agoraphobic. It's okay. Like, so let's not panic. Pardon the pun. Anyway, this is such a good conversation. I thought we would wrap it up quickly, and here we are over 30 minutes already. But I so appreciate the time that you took. I know that people are going to get a lot out of it. I appreciate it. And I thank you for it. How do we find you?
So a couple of ways. So I have a website for my business that is childbehaviorclinic.com.
Okay.
I'm on Instagram at childbehaviordoc. And I have a Facebook page as well. That one is at Child Behavior Clinic.
Okay.
Same as the website.
Send me all those. Well, I know where to find you on Instagram because we're connected. I just made a note. This will be podcast episode 156. So if you go to theanxioustruth.com/156, I'll have all Jackie's links there too, so you can get to her directly from there. So very good.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Jackie. I appreciate you coming by.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. We'll see you again in the next one. Okay. That was good. That was really good. And I cannot thank Dr. Jackie for taking the time that she did to talk about this with us. I know it's an important topic, one that many of you have asked about for quite a long time, and I'm glad we finally got around to addressing it. I'm sure we'll have Dr. Jackie back again down the road to follow up on this, because there's way more that we can talk about when it comes to this particular topic of kids' anxiety, anxiety disorders in children, and all the family issues that surround that. So if you would like to find Dr. Jackie, you can find her on Instagram at childbehaviordoc. Her website is childbehaviorclinic.com, but I will put all of her links on the show notes for this page, which you will find at theanxioustruth.com/157. So if you want to find Jackie's links, pop on over to my website, theanxioustruth.com/157. We'll have all of her stuff linked on that. And there we go. That is episode 157 done. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it. As always, I'm going to play you out with Afterglow by my friend Ben Drake. And you can find Ben and all of his music at his website, which is bendrakemusic.com. Check him out. Give him a listen. He's good at what he does. And I'm going to ask, as always, if you guys are listening on iTunes or any platform that lets you rate or review the podcast, leave a 5-star review if you're digging the podcast, and then take another 45 seconds and maybe write a quick paragraph about what you think about it. Because reviews help other people find the podcast, and if you like it and it's helping you, then it will help other people find it and maybe get the help they need too. I would really appreciate that. Thank you, as always, for giving me your time and attention this week. We will see you next week with another topic. Don't know what that's going to be yet. And as you listen to the music, I will have you remember this. This is the way. It's in the lyrics of the songs we know. It's in these feelings that you never show. Yeah, you're doing fine. It's all around you, you can breathe it in. This is where your story begins. You got the feeling that you're gonna win.